Shabbat Shalom. Radio.
Observation. This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, I know I can be strong.
Well, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to Observations. This is Lisa, and I have Kirk on the line with me.
Hello. Good evening.
Hi, Kirk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got an email from Yada saying that he wasn't able to make it. And Larry's not feeling well, so it's just us.
That's okay.
What a week, huh?
Indeed.
Happy it's Shabbat. Happy it's Shabbat.
Sorry, the best time of the week.
Yes. A grueling, grueling week. Where did we leave off? I believe it was Yeshaya 2:4.
Okay, that's a good
And
place.
I'd like to start there, particularly because of the fires in Israel, which are really devastating. Several, if not hundreds of thousands of people are out of their home. And they were deliberately set by Arabs. Mm. And Israel's burning. And it's a very devastating thing for such a small nation. But I know how they got there. You know how they got there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see what Yahweh has to say.
Okay.
Because I think he's going to talk next about the house of Yaakov. And it says, House of Yaakov, choose to walk, because then we can genuinely and continuously journey throughout space and time of our own volition in the light of Yahweh. Not Adonai. Not Hashem,
no.
Yahweh.
And not Jesus.
And definitely not Jesus. And, you know, I had a very bad reaction on posts on Facebook saying exactly that truth. Perhaps we should drop the Hashem, drop the Adonai, and the house of Yaakov should say the name Yahweh. And the opposition to his name is incredibly fierce.
Wow.
And Yehud would, the house of Jacob today would really do well to listen to what he has to say. And it goes on, except indeed, Ki, your people have rejected and abandoned the house and family of Jacob, because they are full of the ways of Eastern antiquity. And of fortune tellers, magician, and those who practice sorcery by attempting to communicate with dead souls and demonic spirits, like the Palishti, the foreign foes who invade the promised land, invoking fear while separating and terrorizing. And with the offspring of foreigners, they clasp hands and engage in the business of mockery and ridicule. Now, isn't that speaking to Israel today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you a question. When I look at Masoretic text in literaries, and it has the translations there, and it spells Yahweh's name correctly, and it'll say usually Yahweh instead, or over here it might say Lord or something, but it'll say Yahweh. It's no question in anybody's mind what his name is. I mean, everyone, I would assume that Yehudim know what his name is. They just won't pronounce it. Is that correct? I mean,
you would assume incorrectly.
Really?
A lot of rabbinical taught, yeshiva taught Jews do not know the name. The rabbis refuse to speak it. They even put a dash between G and D. It becomes mockery, ridicule. He says here, and you hold hands with these foreigners and engage in the business of mockery and ridicule. They call him Allah. The Jews call him Adonai. Neither are true. That is mockery in its highest form. And it goes on to say, their land is filled and satisfied with silver and gold, and there is no end to their treasures. Their land is filled with swift stallions, and there is no limit to their chariots. Their land is filled with religious images and false gods, the work of their hands. They convey their intent by bowing down in homage and allegiance to that which they have made with their fingers. It goes on to say, so, humankind bows down in submission and fear. Each and most every individual is humiliated and humbled. So do not accept them, support them, endure them, or respect them. It's an incredibly powerful verse. It's as relevant today as it was the day that they turned their back on Yahusha. It's relevant throughout all time.
Well, yes. A lot of this could be construed as applying to the Western, the United States and the Western civilization as well. And, of course, anyone who's turned their back on Yahweh has. But when you look at unlimited, or at what it appears to be unlimited supplies of everything, Israel is not that wealthy in the sense. I mean, they have top-flight army, air force, and so forth. They have a lot of wealth, but nothing like the United States. So, or certainly the Western civilizations that, like Europe and so forth, Western Europe and all. These people have they just seem to have a never-ending supply of bullets and bombs and dollars. So it could apply. Certainly, it would apply to us as well, or the people here. Don't you
think? But he specifically in 2:5 says, Be'eth Yaakov halak wa halak ba'or Yahwa, the house of Yaakov, choose to walk, because then we can genuinely and continuously journey together throughout space and time of our own volition in the light of Yahwa. He's addressing the house of Yaakov. And, you know, when you say Yaakov, you can also say he's the father of the 12 tribes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he's specifically speaking to Jews in the land. And it's really a shame because that's what they're doing. Who are they holding hands with? Well, the Palestine.
Yeah.
And it's right there. But yes, and in any land, you have India, a land of natural resources, Africa, same. America, Europe. We've all done the same things. We've all gone out into the world and spread the God of our own making, and we bow to him.
Indeed.
You know, the words, and the world wandered after the beast, it's everywhere. Everywhere
yeah,
you are.
It's pervasive, yeah. Babylon is pervasive, or the system.
So then it goes on. You okay? So humankind. Do not support them. Do not endure them. Do not respect them. And the following statement is still a future event. And it says this: then the haughty and arrogant, the prideful, inappropriate pride, appearance, perspective, and understanding of mankind shall be diminished and degraded. Wow, don't we see that today?
Mm-hmm.
Reducing and collapsing the spatial dimensions of those individuals. So approaching the set-apart aspect of Yahweh will be inaccessible in that day, which is his day.
Mm-hmm. And that's the returning day, isn't it?
Yes.
That'd be Sukkah? Or in the period right beyond Yom Kippur?
I think this is when he's speaking of there will be those that won't have free will.
Mm-hmm.
Those individuals, you know, he says he's reducing and collapsing the spatial dimensions of those individuals. So approaching the set-apart aspect of Yahweh, which is the Ruach, will be inaccessible that day, which is his day.
Yeah. At that point, everyone's made a decision, or it's too late to, he won't even listen to them, correct?
So. Right. Right. It's that the haughty, the arrogant, your cup is full, you think you know. It's probably going to be the people that cling to religion, that cling to government, which is nothing more than the flip side of the coin of religion.
Yeah. I find it interesting. Now, these are the people that are leaders that lead people away from Yahweh. And how he describes it is another proof to me when I see something like this, another proof that there are three destinations. Because he doesn't say, I'll just destroy them. It doesn't say death and destruction. You know, he talks about reducing it spatially in dimension, which we've come to know more that is like going into a black hole. You're not dying. You're still there. At least your consciousness is still there, your soul. So it further simplifies that, at least when, as I look at it there, now that I know a little bit more than I knew a few years ago. I mean, I could understand. I understood what it said, but I didn't understand exactly how that would work other than being thrown in Sha'ul. So.
Yes, not only that, I think there's something really interesting in these verses. And
mm-hmm.
Today, out there in what they call civilization, you run into some really diminished people.
Mm-hmm.
They're arrogant, but they're not there. They can't think. They can't make a decision. They don't know what to do. They have no common sense.
Scary, huh?
And no work ethic, no pride in what they do. They're zombies. They're the walking dead. They're already mentally diminish. As far as health goes, I mean, I think we're going backwards in health.
Yeah.
Not forwards. So I already see a diminishment of people's capability to think, to live well, or to even know what living well is.
Yeah.
Or what life is. There's no respect for life.
No. Well, we just seem to think it's nothing of destroying everything. I ask people sometimes, at least I ask people when we were talking a little bit of politics or something, and I asked somebody, I think the other day, I said, well, what, why do you, because they thought of themselves as a moral person, and I asked them, well, you support a government that thinks nothing of killing millions, literally millions, and it doesn't seem to bother anybody. My God, we had back in the days of Vietnam, we killed 1 million people, and then in Laos was another war going on next door that nobody talked about, and they killed 1 million people there. I mean, that's history. We went into Iraq and killed 1 million people, or allowed 1 million people to die. They didn't care about what's the little town is the country and near the Sudan where the Muslims invaded and killed all the Christians there. it's not a love or dislike of Christianity. It's the fact that who told them it's okay? Where do you how can you be moral and think that way?
For God and country, of course.
Yeah.
Don't you know?
Well, because they're saving us or they're the bad guys. I mean, what is this, a cowboy and Indian Western? I mean, this is real life here.
Well, Yahweh does say that, I'm not sure of the Torah address, but it sticks in my mind, that Mystery Babylon is the hammer that crushes the earth. If you look at a map today of all their little lily pad and bases, military lily pad bases, and their actual bases all over the world, you will see that there is not very many countries left without a U.S. military base or a governmental lily pad there in one form or another.
Now, there are dozens of them now all over Africa that were not there before. You'd be hard-pressed to find anything. Obviously,
Speaking of a moral, what type of person could say, I am pious, as a Muslim does, because he gets and puts his nose in the sand 5 times a day and goes and burns the land that they actually are living in? It's insanity.
Yeah. It's you almost have to laugh in the sense that you have any relief from this. I mean, if you really thought about it too hard, my gosh, we destroy the animal world kingdom when we were wiping out everything that's alive in most parts of the world. And even if they didn't do it in a particular location, once you destroy so much of the planet, there's nothing left for the planet. You know, the planet can't live. If you destroy enough of the sea, things can't, you know, we all die. So in those days that are coming, I think it's quite obvious, if he doesn't come on time,
those days that are coming. Those days are here. We're,
yeah,
we're
well,
really
I mean, coming quicker, coming very quick in our lifetime. So we will,
yes,
if we were not
currently
taken away, we
in
would
the
see
amount
we
of countries
see.
That are engaged in war right now, if you look at it from a holistic perspective and take a step back, you'll realize that these are the days of Noah. All humanity is becoming violent towards one another. You look at even in the political scheme. Do you know how many people have filed for divorce after this last political cycle?
No.
Suicides. Suicides are up astronomically. Divorces.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Well, I know the military suffers from it tremendously, but wow. No. I've kind of bowed out of the political thing. I read some of the headlines and occasional stories, you know, some of the weirdest things, but I haven't been keeping up with it like in the days of Shattering Mess when it was, Craig would do 2 hours of news. But it's, every time you do delve into it, my gosh, it's frightening what people are doing and what people don't see, and it doesn't seem to be, they don't seem to care.
Well,
so, yeah.
I'll tell you the last time
I watched. If it ain't
Noah's
Day, I don't know what else you would call it.
Yeah, the last time I watched news, I became so frustrated and viscerally angry that I actually ripped the television out of the wall and threw it off the second floor balcony. So
you're kidding, right?
No, I'm not. I haven't had a TV in 8 years. I killed that box and. The housekeeper looked at me gasping like I was insane. I viscerally react to what I see happening. And what I see is just, it's filth. It's bala. Everything upside down, inside out, right side up a lie. And and people have their head over their ears and they're deaf, dumb, lame, and stupid. Insane. And they refuse to listen. They refuse to, even Jews refuse to listen while their land is burning and they're putting their stuff in shopping carts to get away. That, you know what, maybe perhaps, just perhaps, if you drop that whole Adonai crap, maybe this would stop. Yet, no, the name is too sacred. No, you know, we're going to block her. We're erase the comments. Get rid of it. And there's no wonder to me there are anti-Semites in the world. There's it's frustrating beyond my ability to cope sometimes with the arrogance about the name, the arrogance and the hatred. And, you know, I want to jump right into this next verse because I think it's really right where we are. And
okay.
It says this, "Indeed, surely, the day for the approach of Yahweh, of the spiritual implements, shall be a time of degrading diminishment." And that word is shafal. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Shin word, shakar, shafal, shalak, all of these words are very devastating words. And he says, "It shall be a time of denigrating diminishment against all of the arrogant and haughty elitists who have risen to positions of authority, those who have risen to positions of power, and the high-ranking and the most prominent." And we can think of lots of people in those positions today who are the most immoral, wicked, and arrogant, thieving, corrupt, greedy leaders that are at the helm of this incredibly fast-sinking ship.
Yeah. Well, I know it's the more you think about it, the harder for me it is to understand them. Because there's nothing much to gain. I mean, only I can understand some people who are very, very rich who want to run the world. But I have a hard time with so many people going along with them. It just
The effect that they have on humanity is devastating. Even the system that we live under. The woman changes. She's a Nakash. She's a changeling. And she changed from the pulpit to the podium without stepping a beat. And no one was the wiser. You ever ask yourself, Kirk, what the word capitalism means?
Well, I know what capitalism is, but what was the first one? You say it again.
The first Capitolina was where? The Vatican?
Oh, the Vatican, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we call it the Capitol as well. And all the architecture is the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And who's the mother of capitalism?
Babylon is the start of everything. Is started pretty much in Babylon as far as how to run a society without God.
Oh, this much is very true. I'm going to get to that right next.
Okay.
What is this capitalism driven by? Well, it's
money.
Driven by consumerism.
Mm-hmm.
Consumer, a town in Babylon, ism. Oh, wow, it all really falls into place now.
Very good.
It is a delusional system in which men think that they are free or equal, and they're not.
No.
They're not. Nor is it to any type of a free market system at all. To defend this thing called even a constitution is ridiculous. It is a pagan system.
Well, the minute
it is
you
a Greco-Roman Carthage pagan system.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact
the minute
that people
you allow, the minute you allow them to tax you, then you don't control anything. It's like the argument I had when I was a little kid when I first discovered that my grandmother was talking about a house next door. She was trying to save the house next door for her family. And I asked her, save it from what? And she said, well, they have to pay their property taxes. I was a little kid, maybe 10. I didn't understand very much. And she explained to me, no, every year you have to pay a percentage of the value of the house and taxes. And so I figured out pretty quick. I said, well, that means you never own anything. She says, yeah.
Yeah, you want to find out who owned your home? Don't pay your taxes.
Yeah,
you'll
don't
find
pay
out
it.
Real
and
quick.
When they haul you off and they put it up for auction, then you'll know.
Yeah. Yeah, don't pay that tax. You'll see who owns the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's not you. We're it's more of a feudalism system.
Mm-hmm.
Only perverse, and you know, you don't own the land. What was the feudal system? I work the land for 3 days, and then I have to go work the master's land for 3 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then
or worse,
on
yeah.
Sunday you go worship Hashatan.
Right.
The truth is it really any different? I mean, we're headed in this direction. Overtaxed, the welfare Ponzi scheme alone is just, and it's going to get worse with the
mm-hmm.
Muslim onslaught coming in, the immigration. It's just getting worse.
Yeah.
So, but, yeah, well, make no mistake, you know, we're angry with the Epsteins and these horrendous evil people out there, the pedophile rings that go right up to the top. And they're all elitist. Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind Yahweh will bring these people down into a pit.
Yeah. Well, he says he will, and he will, and he ought to. So it's,
and I have to remember this sometimes because I get really angry with them.
Well, it's okay to be against it, but don't worry. He's quite capable of doing this, and he's going to fix it. So,
yes, you know,
so
I get really weird about revenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I'm a very jealous person. When I get really weird about revengeful things about Yahweh's words, I sit down and write over and over, vengeance belongs to Yahweh alone. So I can get it through my thick Yahud head, because we all have thick heads. And I have to remember that I need do nothing.
Yeah.
I don't need to speculate about this. I can't even watch Hillary's face on a TV without wanting to punch it.
That was the biggest thrill, that she didn't win. It's just you don't have to look at her.
I
get ill every time I look at them because they've almost become an icon, that you see past that to all that they are, and you just go, wow, I can't stand it.
I think it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful thing to see what WikiLeaks is going to come out with, because it's not finished. It's just not.
Are they due for some more?
They are due for some more, and as far as I know from the hacker community, Julian Assange's dead man switch has been turned on. I don't know what this means.
That means he's back.
But
back
it means, no. Unfortunately, it means something a dead man switch is when you access the system, if you don't have the correct passwords in a certain time frame and answer them, then the information and data dump gets dropped anyway. That means that the person controlling the system is compromised.
Hmm.
Supporters of Julian Assange are asking for proof of life. I know that he's had a Swedish Justice Department come and speak to him. I know there's been some little things happening, but the information will come out regardless if Julian is compromised or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's called a dead man switch.
Okay.
That it will go out regardless if he's dead or not. So when this information comes out, I will gloat over the look on her face and Bill's face and Epstein and a whole lot of these elitist scumbags.
Yeah.
Because they're into some very nefarious stuff with children. And, you know, we need to shine a light on those cockroaches, truly. That's the only work we need to do. The rest is up to Yahweh, and I can promise you his wrath is going to be so much more important than anything that I could do, little me.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So whether it's Christianity, whether it's secular humanism, it doesn't matter what flavor. Yahweh's going to diminish everyone, all of them that are in high places. And I think that's something really to smile about, because what they've done is incredibly wicked.
Well, the world, historically, the world has been doing the same stuff for a long time. It's just never been quite so pervasive, or we haven't had so many people on the planet, and it's just worse to the point that it's, you could never survive it. If Yahweh was not coming, the planet couldn't survive. The human race couldn't survive this.
Now we have idiots
with
red, sitting at the desk with red buttons to nuclear bombs.
Well, he doesn't.
Idiots, really evil people.
Yeah. Well, we've had those for a long time. The thing that if I find, one of the few things that I've been reading in the news recently has been about Russia, because in the Magog, end of the Magog War, or it's got to be a nuclear holocaust, and that nuclear exchange has to take place between the two people that most appropriately have enough weapons to do so. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a nuclear winter, which is the only description I could possibly think of that would cause it to be to fulfill these prophecies. We've got Russia building. You know, there are no treaties that are in force. We're not going to do this and we're not going to do that. And we may say it, but we still continue to do it. And Russia is now building as many, if they had ever stopped, nuclear weapons and all, and they placed a bunch of...
Oh, yes, they have one literally called Satan. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Do they? Okay, well, that doesn't surprise me.
Absolutely. They have one of their strongest atomic nuclear bomb, and they call it Satan. Hmm. And to me, I think Putin is the king of the North. I don't think this man is going to give up his power, and he is, he's really something. I've lived in Kazakhstan for a little while. I know the Russian mentality a bit. I know men like Putin. They're transparent as cellophane to me. This is the kind of guy that would push a button.
Yeah.
He really would.
Well, somebody's going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're
going to
do it.
Yeah.
And we're totally weaponized and ready, and the response would be awful, and this, there goes a third of the world. So what is not hit by the asteroid, or what's not the tsunamis don't get. So I'd look at this, and nobody seems to be frightened by any of these things. I mean,
and what did they do in the days of Noah? They married,
sat around and played, I guess. So. Had babies and kept on going.
Yeah.
Killing.
Yeah.
I
and
just,
none was the wiser. 8 people got out of there. Oh,
good
it's,
number.
Yeah. It's a very good number. Turn it on its side, it's even better.
Uh-huh, that's right.
And, you know, let's go on to the next verse. And I really like this. And so, upon and against all the cedars, the strong and established of Lebanon, who whitewash and pave over the high, overbearing, and haughty, and exalted and honored, and against all of the oaks, they the mighty, the religious worship of Allah, the greatest. And he talks about the oaks of Bashan, but you know, these are not trees they're talking about.
All a metaphor. Yes.
Habashan, the snake, the lowly and little that tramples underfoot. This projection of power. And if you really look at the word Lebanon and pull it apart, it is kind of very I have a word study on it. I'll have to pull it up and post it on Facebook. It's a very interesting place. Even the cheese that they serve in Lebanon looks like a whitewashed brick. Do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
I only know that because I love this cheese. I do. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful cheese. But even the cheese that is in Lebanon looks like a whitewashed brick. And, you know, but he's talking about the exalted.
I found a reference to it. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. He's talking about the
exalted.
No,
I was just saying,
honor,
I found a reference in association with that where it says about Lebanon. And when I was doing some little translations in Ezekiel 31:3, and he says, "Behold, the Assyrian Asura was a cedar of Lebanon, the white mountain range of Palestine." Are the mountains kind of whitish there or something? Or is that just because of the snow, or was it?
Actually, Lebanon does have snow in their mountains, yes. Just as Israel does occasionally. So, and they were filled with beautiful, beautiful forest of cedar.
Of course.
But they
then
cut them all down and used them for weapons and ships and, you know, religious temples.
Well, the Ottoman Empire also, I mean, Israel, when in the 18, I think it was early, or maybe it was the middle 1860s, Samuel Clements, you know, the writer, he went over there for a visit and he wrote all about it. And he said he couldn't find it until he got to Jerusalem, he couldn't find a tree. And if you study history a little bit, you find the Ottoman Empire just raped the land completely. So, and hauled off anything that was left. So, it's amazing.
Well, the word Arab alone kind of really just settles it, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
A desolate, they're like locusts. Wherever they go, they just eat everything up of value. And they leave a midbar, a desolation,
mm-hmm.
a dry place in their wake.
So I'll be looking forward to your post on that. Now that you've committed, you have to post it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yes, they use the cedars of Lebanon to build many of their temples, their warships, their weapons, their besiege machines, and to do Greek fire when they learned how to do that. And yeah, the Ottoman Empire did, but even before then, the forests and mountains of Lebanon have been stripped for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they'll have one lonely big tree and say, ah, that is our symbol. Their national symbol is a cedar, by the way. It's on their flag.
Yeah, I have seen that.
So there's no mistaking who is who is Lebanon. Not at all. And it's pretty amazing. And if you want, are you with me on the same verse? If you want to, go ahead and read the next one.
Well, where you're at 2:13, have you completed? Did you complete the whole thing on 2:13?
Yeah, I did two. Yeah, up to two. Sorry, I'm working on someone else's computer.
That's okay. I've just got sheets here, so. And you, I think you've got
to
of Bashan, the serpent.
Yeah, I got up
okay.
there.
Then he goes on to say, "And I will be against all of the mountains' elevated positions who have sought or ascribed high status for themselves, and against all of the hills which are exalted and honored." And that completes 2:14, so... what I do, you know, just personally, for fun, when we're doing these sort of things, I go down and break down just about every word as best as I can. But unfortunately, my notes are not there. I got the, that's two, forgive me for talking out loud and just being a little confused, but I don't have my 2:14. So as far as the commentary goes, it's still... we can read what he wrote. He's on. Forgive me, Lisa. I lost my place here.
No, it's okay. He's talking about the word is used Giba, the hills, Giba, and it's used seven times to denote seven specific hills. And he's talking about which are exalted and honored.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know three cities with seven hills. Rome, Vatican, who is the Whore of Babylon via Roman Catholicism. Also, Mecca, with their seven man-made hills around their Kaaba and Israel. That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's profound to me that, you know, HaShatan, I don't think, has a creative bone in his body. He only perverts the things which were once good. He twists them. He misleads, perverts, Balaam. Inside out, upside down. So we have, but he, in here, he, I, it's no doubt he's talking about
not
Roman
wrong.
Christianity.
No.
Because the seven hills, and they called it what, the eternal city,
mm-hmm.
the universal church.
Yeah, well, that's what
so
Catholic
she,
means. Yeah, so
she's the mother of harlots. She really is. And I'll go on to the next verse, and we'll just switch back and forth. And one of the seven messengers. Who has seven bulls, came and spoke with me, saying, come here, I shall show you the judgment of the great whore who sits on many waters, and with whom the rulers of the earth commit acts of immorality. And those who dwell on the earth were intoxicated with the wine of her immorality. And he carried me away into the Ruach, into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast full of blasphemous names, like Lord, God, Jesus,
mm-hmm.
Allah, Isa, all of those, having seven heads and ten horns. And
mm-hmm.
the woman was clothed in purple and scarlet and pearls, having in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and of unclean things of her immorality, and upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, Mother of Harlot and Abominations of the Earth. And that comes from Revelation or Chazon. And because the understanding is that we're connecting Bashan, which is the snake, to the whore. And I found some very interesting news coming out of Europe,
okay.
about the Muslim immigration, even though they're burning cars in Paris and being, you know, doing what Muslims do. There's something quietly happening in the background also, is that many Muslims are converting to Christianity.
Really?
Yes.
From one frying pan into the other, huh?
Yes. Absolutely. And
well, you know, Erdogan reported that he was he's mad at Europeans, and he's going to send a whole bunch of thousands and thousands more immigrants into Europe. And I thought to myself, well, why can't they stop them? But of course, they won't, and they can't. They've, you know, opened their borders, so you know, he's going to send more and more and more and more. So that's going to expedite the carnage in Europe.
Absolutely, and they're going to make their way through the poorest borders. They've already done it in the south of the United States.
Yes.
It's going to continue. The world will be flooded with Muslim immigrants who want to kill you in the name of their God, Allah, who is disgusting to me. But
you know,
it goes on to say, and I saw the
sorry,
woman drunk with the blood of the set apart and with the blood of the witnesses of Yahusha. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly. So when the messenger said to you, why do you wonder? I shall tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast that carries her, which has seven heads and ten horns. The beast that you saw was and is not, and is about to come up out of the abyss and go into destruction. And those who dwell on the earth will wander, whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they see the beast, that he was and is not and will come.
Mm-hmm. His commentary is quite good on this, and I've studied
it. Oh, I'd
that
love
in.
For you to read it. Yes, please
okay,
do. Because
let's
I think
do
this is
let's
just absolutely beautifully written.
Okay. The encounter between Yohanan and the spiritual messenger occurred between sometime in 66 CE, which means that the demonic spirit, which had possessed Shaul, or Paul, by his own admission, 3 decades prior to this revelation in 36 CE, had just returned to the abyss following Paul's death earlier in the same year. This explains the was and is not reference. Paul was Yohanan's most nefarious foe, as is noted in Paul's letters to Timothy and Yahusha's statements regarding Ephesus, where Paul was overtly critical of Yohanan. The same demon, however, would emerge to possess Hadrian 6 decades later when he destroyed Jerusalem, renaming it after himself, while erecting a shrine to deify himself on the Temple Mount, all occurring between 126 and 136 CE. The most vile of the satanic messengers would then possess Muhammad in 610 CE, creating Islam. But that is not the last that we will see of the satanic envoy. The dark spirit who possessed Paul, Hadrian, and Muhammad will return to possess the Torahless One, more commonly known as the Antichrist. And since this demon is a living embodiment of religion and politics, those who do not know God will be scratching the head, befuddled as to why the Antichrist, or the Torahless One, will have so much in common with the individuals that they have been beguiled into revealing. Collectively, Paul, Hadrian, and Muhammad serve as the prototypes for this evil one in our horizon. That's pretty, unless you're into prophecy, it won't make as much sense to you, or you won't hold it with as much truth. But, you know, history doesn't lie. That's what happened. That guy, of all the people who are possessed or could be possessed in a big way, that's them. So I would have a hard time arguing with that analysis of it. And as far as the Torahless One that's coming, of course, that's the guy from Macedonia, according to the to Daniel. And he will have to do, just as Craig talks about this a lot, and I don't disagree, he'll have to have a tremendous amount of ability to play all sides against the metal. He'll be very attractive to the secular humanists, because remember, there's several billion of them. He's got to be attractive to the Muslims, which at this point would be...
He is going to be a universal lover.
Oh, universal leader, absolutely. Religious
no
leader,
lover.
Political leader.
He's going to love everything immoral. He is a lover of the horror.
Yeah.
For every ball, there is a bell. And he is the ball to the bell. Or the bell to the ball. I'm
well,
not quite sure, because the ruach that rests over him is a woman. It's the same ruach that rested over Paul, over Muhammad, that grasped hold of him. But this time, it's going to be a little different. He is going to fully embody that.
Yeah.
And he's going to have so much charisma and oratory skills. And he's going to sound so convincing that he's going to convince the secularists, the Muslims, and the Christians, and guess who else? The Jews! Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. He is going to be a universal lover and leader.
That so bothers
yeah.
me. Oh, no, don't be crazy.
The most frustrating thing is trying to...
Well, you know, the way is...
Speak to
is,
people.
Well, you know, what's coming down now is with the Catholic Church and the Pope all getting so cozy with the imams and the at some point the caliph, whoever he becomes in those days, in the short days that we have before he gets here. But if you push all these Muslim jihadists, correct me if I'm wrong, if you push all these people into the Western world, Western and the United States, as well as in Australia, the old Commonwealth of England, and also into Europe, and they continue to go crazy and start blowing up things and doing it, then it'll be an easy transition for him to say, okay, here's the solution. And of course, the solution is to give up the West, what they call the West Bank or the East Bank, I guess, to Jerusalem, the Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. So I always try to figure out how can you get people to turn against Jerusalem? And it's just the pressure.
No, it's that
old blood libel.
You've got to have,
somebody out there shouting in the streets and blowing things up.
It's a very old trick that the Catholic Church has used for eons, because he goes on to say, those who have wisdom, the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. Okay. That's Rome.
Mm-hmm.
And she's had a trick for the last 2,000 years. And that trick is, whatever the problem is, it's the Jews. They did it. So let's go get them. Let's stop fighting between ourselves. Let's hold hands and, you know, go get the Jews.
Well, wait a minute. You got 7 billion people in the world, and you got 12 million Jews. How powerful could these people absolutely be? How stupid is that? I'm not saying you can't have a powerful person that's is Yehudim, but come on.
Well, the house of Yaakov.
How do you spell that? I mean, you have to. There has to be something in man that's not with God, that he just absolutely hates all things God's.
Well, it does say that in what I was studying, some words about the Elam,
mm-hmm.
and it said that the nations despise him. The nations despise him.
Okay,
it's,
my question
it's
then
not
becomes:
just the Jews they hate. They hate Yahweh.
Yeah, it has to be Yahweh. It's like Samuel taking offense to it. He said, well, you know, and Yahweh tells him, look, he's not rejecting you. He's rejecting me.
And like a jilted lover, because the whore is a jilted lover,
mm-hmm.
who becomes angry and arrogant and not just immoral, but she has a tantrum. And what does she want to do? If I can't have you, a woman who wants to be incredibly nasty and wicked and evil will kill her own children to keep the man or the thing that she loves, you know? Women can be incredibly loving, and they can be incredibly brutal. I think it's just, you know, the nations hate Yahweh. They love their religion. They love their systems, even though they're ensnared by them. And whatever represents Yahweh in the world, and I'm not saying the Jews represent Yahweh, because right now they don't.
Well, not in the current state, but they have brought the Torah to us. Without it, nobody would have kept it.
The only thing I can say good for them is they kept the Shabbat, sort of.
Yeah. And they kept the Shabbat.
They didn't understand it.
And most of the Moabites, at least you can find them there, you know, so. Without the Torah, what would we have? We have nothing.
To some degree or another, it's there, but it's so convoluted and you know, it's just, you know, he will come after Yahweh's children. The world will, because
mm-hmm.
they'll cling to their religion, they'll cling to their customs, they'll cling to the lies of their forefathers, and the more that they're pressed, the more they'll cling.
Yeah. Well, see, I grew
until
up, you know,
they
I...
become the oaks of Bashan. Oaks are very strong,
mm-hmm.
sturdy wood. They're not bendable.
No. It's a hard wood.
There was a Jewish proverb my grandmother used to say, listen to me now while you're a willow, because you won't listen when you're an oak. And I never really understood what that means. It was just so weird. But now I get it.
Yeah.
And then I look,
you know,
the only time willows are ever mentioned in Torah, it's
mm-hmm.
next to the river in Babylon where they asked us to sing. And it's so sad. Every perverseness in rabbinical Jewish life, all of our customs, are absolutely worthless. The customs in Christianity are worthless.
Absolutely,
the traditions in Islam are worthless. The traditions of secular humanism, which was actually birthed out of the Catholic Church, It's all worthless. Worthless lies, a delusional system, all of it. But here he says the world wanders right after her, stumbling in her immorality. And he goes on to say, here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sits. And there are seven rulers. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. But when he comes, he must remain a little while. This is talking about the rulers of Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you ought to read the commentary just below the first part and then the second part, or I will if you want, and then we can talk about it a little bit, just of interest to the people who may not have the stuff in front of them.
Understanding? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
This is the difference to the five who had fallen. They're Julius, and that was 44 BCE, Augustus, which is 14 CE, Tiberius, 37 CE, Caligula, 41 CE, and Claudius, 54 CE. The imperial Roman ruler, still alive at the time of Revelation, was Naughty Nero.
Yeah,
one of
naughty.
My favorites.
Kind of word, yeah. And
that was in 68 CE.
Yeah. Now those three that fought over it, or actually their armies fought over for them, the Galban, Otho, and Vitellius, are in most any history book. In fact, I was reading some stuff the other night about that, and he's true here. In 69, they just killed each other real quickly, or the armies took over each other. So the next one, of course, is Vespasian. And I'm sorry, now you may go on ahead, but.
Oh, yes. Vespasian was one of my first two emperors that I really looked at and researched, and wow, what a cupcake he really was. A real cupcake, that one. He was special. And that was 69 to 79 CE.
Yeah, you had a decade.
He was the one who had not come yet and would remain a little while.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, come he did. Oh, yes, with three Roman legions, he invaded Yehuda and destroyed Yahweh's temple. His son Titus would haul off the treasure, using it to finance that ever-so-lovely Colosseum, the ultimate shrine to depraved and disgusting immorality.
If
the revolt against Roman taxation, which initiated the invasion that commenced in 66 CE, when Rome plundered Yahweh's temple and then brought the brunt of the legion, which is fulminata against, that's a terrible Roman word, against Yehuda, were the very year the revelation of Yochanan happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in Patmos. I've been to Patmos. What an interesting place. Yes, I have. I lived for a while over in 7 years. I lived in Cyprus, Kittim.
Really?
And back in the days of my youth, and diving and boating and fishing and spearfishing, and great times. Actually, I think I felt the most healthiest over there.
So you were a Renaissance kind of girl, huh?
I had a husband who traveled and did lots of international contracts.
Cool.
So there weren't too many places to pop off on a jet to go to Kazakhstan, so we chose Cyprus.
good thinking.
And that's another lovely place, Kazakhstan. It's a beautiful thing. very strange places. they decimated the land. And Vespasian was especially cruel, but the Colosseum, that was 100% Jewish slave labor.
Yes.
And when I researched some of the shows that the performance and just raw.
There's nothing that matches it in history. Because if you think about it, If you think about it, I can read you about I could tell you about Carthaginians and how cruel they were, and my God, they matched the Romans crucifix for crucifix. However, when you put people in those positions doing these horrible things, and you are put in a coliseum where people are buying their popcorn and their hot dogs and their Coca-Colas, watching it and cheering on, that's a depth of depravity that is unbelievable. It's incomprehensible to me. I mean, I know nothing like it. I mean, this is not taking them off in some secret place and destroying them. They're actually saying, here, go in and let's watch the show. My God.
Blood sport. And today, our blood sport is called war. It's just gone bigger. The Colosseum has encompassed the entire world.
Yeah. And we display it. And we cheer it. We're patriots. We're asked to be patriots. Support
God
the war.
God and country, right?
God, yeah.
Right? Isn't that it?
Yeah. See, God and country or king, yeah. Yeah. Whatever your flavor is from where you are. Absolutely.
Yes. The beast is jumped, like I said, from the pulpit to the podium and goes back and forth without stepping a beat.
Yeah.
She's a Nakash. She's a changeling, a perversion of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Rome is
the epitome of it all.
Yeah, if you get any real in-depth study to Rome or Carthage, and a real Senate was actually born in Carthage, with the 70 rulers and the king by title only, and in certain under certain circumstances that had changed later. However, they were every bit as totally demonic as Rome.
Oh yeah. And just for the future reference, as we move forward in this thing, you're going to find that Carthage is the thing that supported it mostly. As anyone who's read much knows, that it was the navy that supported it. It was their control over the Mediterranean that allowed them to be so horrible and so wicked. They controlled the trade. They controlled the merchants. They controlled the armies, because
they controlled the gold coming from Africa.
Yep, absolutely. Well, a lot of people don't know that. You know, there are not only mines in the Iberian Peninsula and Spain and Portugal and so forth, but in, right up to France and some down to Africa. But some of the biggest metal mines, whether it be nickel or copper or whatever, tin, all were in southern England. And they were controlling all that way back before anybody pretended they knew where England was.
I think you're missing a very crucial stopover. Kittim. The copper mines in Cyprus have been providing copper for 3,000 years.
Yeah, that too.
I only know because I've been in the copper mines.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, they're... Kittim has a special call-out also that perhaps someday we'll...
The Tyre also or something? Is Tyre and then or at least some part around southern Turkey or northern Israel, somewhere in there? Anyway, I think that comes
Kittim
a little bit later.
Kittim is Cyprus today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's the island between Egypt and Israel.
Right. Still being fought over between the Greeks and the Turks.
Yes, the only UN city that has a border in between.
Yeah.
And that was because the Americans wanted a base over there on the Turkish side.
What the heck?
And Greek Cypriots don't really care for Americans. Just to let you know, if you travel there, they don't like you all over there at all. Carthage, in my studies, here's an interesting note about Carthage.
Okay.
And this was written by a shipman who wrote a book and witnessed firsthand the rites of the religious rites of Carthage. And what I found interesting was that the children that they would sacrifice were veiled in a very dark, I would have to guess, back in those days, it must have been goatskin weaving, to, like what they use on tents, the Bedouin, even today.
Wow.
So it was like a black sack. Who wears this black sack today?
Well, we have the jihadist.
The Muslim women.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about, yes. Okay, I'm with you.
Only they have little slits for eyes, right?
Yeah, so.
Underneath this black veil were the sacrifices unto their God.
Huh.
And he wrote about this in 1700s. I'll have to post the book online. It's a very odd read, but very depraved society. And I think that was where the whole Islamic dress came from.
That's interesting.
Isn't that wonderful? Like a sacrifice to a burning God.
Yeah. My.
Halal Ben Shakar couldn't be more in your face. How stupid are you human beings? You can't study your own past, your own customs, your own religion to know how I am mocking you. It's amazing,
well,
huh?
There was just along those lines, there was someone who was getting all excited about how wonderfully religious Thanksgiving is in the U.S. And they were talking about the pilgrims who came over, and they talk about after they got a little bit established and everything, and they were just saying, well, these were what these, trying to paint them as a beautiful group of people. And they're stupid people, but beautiful people. And I thought interesting what he said. Now, they would go to church on Sunday, and they would have 3 hours of church on Sunday, and with sermons and all, and then they would have a break for an hour, and they'd come back for about 4 more hours in the afternoon with it for an intensive study in the Old and New Testament. And I'm going, at some point, did anybody ask the question, is there supposed to be a church, or is there supposed to be a Sunday worship, or is what happened to
it's
the
impossible. Seventh? If they actually studied what they call the Old Testament, they wouldn't be meeting anywhere on a Sunday.
No, no. So, I mean, it's there. When I was a Christian, we were, which probably led me and my wife to this, we talked about all the time. I mean, the preacher, we covered the mikras. We were told they weren't important anymore because of what Jesus had done, quote unquote. But we knew where the mikras were. We knew what Yahweh's name was. He called him Yahweh, maybe mispronouncing, but nonetheless, Yahweh. We knew that the Sabbath was Saturday. So it took us, obviously I'm slow.
Well, I just have one up on you. I knew it was always Saturday.
You know, because, well, one day, you know, it's the first day of the week. We'll meet on the first day of the week because Paul said so. So that's how all that came about. You know, and we kind of defended it that way. But we are stupid. Satan can go in and just say right in your face and you just go, okay.
I don't think that we're so stupid. I think we're, you know, like language, everything devolves.
Mm-hmm.
We're devolving. We're diminishing.
Mm-hmm.
We have more information today than ever before.
Yeah.
And Yahweh made that happen. He says, I will open, you know, that information. Mm-hmm. I will make my name known among my people. And it's really beautiful. It's happening. It's all happening, and we're so. This is a very exciting time.
It's the best time.
We're watching this, and of course we have visceral reactions. You know, we know what is going to happen, and these people are ignorant. But what I really think is that human beings are a bit more like, and this is going to sound strange, but sheep. Sheep are very malleable. They learn. They can make executive decisions. They're one of the only animals that can make actually an executive decision. Sheep. And yet we call them stupid. We're not stupid. We're malleable. This whole matrix is social conditioning. And we fall for it. We fall for it. And when you fall for it, it ensnares you. You have to question everything. Everything you must question. And the only
well, that's
the
what
only
I stopped doing. That,
room,
that was my problem.
True
I stopped doing it. It's
inquiry is Torah.
You could shook up again before I would. So, yeah.
I mean, everything we know, where did today? It all came from Torah. It all came from his dabar, his words.
Yeah. Well, it's for us because for you not so much, but for us that speak our primary language is English. It took somebody to translate it. I mean, the thing about Yada, the thing about Craig that did it for me is I can make a decision based on the right information. If I have it so twisted that I can't figure it out, and you can't. I mean, I used to listen to sermons and go, I don't even know what he's talking about.
What is he talking about?
I never thought I was stupid, but
that
doesn't make any sense.
The masochistic text is the same thing. You read it and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And not all of it, but especially wherever there's a verse about the Messiah or about his work, or it makes no sense. We have those stumbling blocks too.
Yeah.
But the beautiful thing about what Craig and I wrote him when I first came on board and was reading his writings, and I had an emotional reaction, and I said, oh my gosh, there is someone out there that loves these words to show them so much care and thought and inquiry. And when he, you know, I knew the Ruach was feminine, and I was just looking for someone else to confirm, because I felt I was insane. This is a woman. This is female. It's feminine. And then and even Yahweh's name. And I said, why do you hate women so much? Why do the rabbis hate us? Why does Hashatan, what's going on? You know? And it was beautiful that someone outside Yehuda actually loved the words, Hebrew words.
Mm-hmm.
Hebrew words. And that was the most beautiful thing to me. And, you know, I love the words. Craig loves the words. You love the words.
Sure.
We can all love the words in you're doing paleo. I also love very much to look at the words in paleo and to even make all of the completeness of it. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Indeed it is, yeah.
And Yahweh said he's going to make himself known to the Goyim, and they will love him, and they will say his name. And here it's happening. It's beautiful.
Wow. Well,
especially to a Yahud, because we're so hated in the world, and it's only going to get worse. To have someone grafted in, or being a branch, or coming in, it's wonderful. It's truly is that there are people out there that really do love Yahweh and everything he has to say.
Mm-hmm. Where you are, where you live, are there people around that are also have come to know Yahweh the way you have, or are you kind of an isolated island?
I am absolutely alone.
Wow.
No. There is no one on that island that is willing to listen to. They love Jesus, and that's all there is to it.
Yes, it is.
They love
Jesus.
They're superstitious. They believe in witches.
Yeah.
They cannot understand. I try.
Now,
the last woman I talked to about the name Jesus hits me with her holy Biblos. While we're
I'm sorry. I mean to laugh at you being hit, but I'm just the comedy of that. I mean, my God.
Excuse me. Have you accepted Jesus into your heart? I said, no, ma'am, I'm a Jew. I don't. The Jesus, there is no Jesus. There's no J. And I told her this, and she proceeded to hit me with her holy Biblos. And no, if you were to say this in the town square, if I were to say this in the town square in, say, Roseau or Portsmouth, they would actually cut me with a machete. They love Jesus very much. And
well,
they're not willing
I'm
to hear anything else.
The places down south, I mean, you wouldn't mount the podium and tell them the truth and expect to get out of there unscathed. It won't happen.
Oh, wow. And another thing about Dominica, all of the high places, the beautiful stretches of land, all have one thing in common, the very, very nice pieces of land. They all have Roman Catholic churches on. those sites.
Of course, of course. They always take the best material, the best real estate.
Okay.
Oh yes.
Well, the good news is it's all going to disappear. Yeah, well, it's going to take 5 days and clean it all up. So that'll be fun to watch too. Besides the trial.
Yeah, it will. He said he's going to make men as scarce as the gold of Orphir. And I struggled for a long time as to where this place was. And mm-hmm. it's in Arabia. And there's just dust left.
Nothing there.
That's, there's just dust. Dust particles of gold. There's nothing left. No.
Isn't that interesting? And he's always right. It's amazing, isn't it? And everything he chooses to say is always, you look it up and there it is, yeah.
It's always profoundly accurate, yes.
Yeah.
So shall we continue on with the,
sure,
with the next
start
one?
With, yeah, where they end the beast. Shall,
yes,
shall
there
I,
you
or you, would you like to carry on?
Go ahead, Kurt, please.
Okay. Okay, and then we're at the end. The beast, which was and is not, is himself also an eighth. And is one of seven, and he goes to destruction. I'm going to go ahead and read the commentary that follows because I think it's helpful and probably a lot smarter than anything I'm going to say. So, since the beast is a reference to one of Satan's demons and its influence over political and religious doctrine, the one which was and is not depicts the demon which had, until just recently, from Yahokana's perspective, possessed Paul. And since it was also an eighth, this is the reference to the demonic spirit who would later possess Hadrian, Muhammad, and the Torahless One, ultimately going to destruction upon Yahweh's return in circa 2033. The reason this demon is mentioned as one of the seven is because Hadrian and the Torahless One represent the beast of Rome, or Imperial Rome, which evolved into Roman Catholicism. This is the essence of the mystery of Babylon. If some of the terminology is a bit confusing, I suggest turning to the seventh volume, Yada Yah, and that's, quite frankly, on Daniel, where I read most of this the first time. And then he goes on to say that Catholicism grew out of the Imperial Rome, having previously evolved from Greece, Persia, and Babylon over a millennium, from 539 BCE to 395 CE, to become Roman Catholicism during the reign of Theodosius, the last emperor to rule over Eastern and Western Rome. He was the first Caesar to impose the Roman Catholic Church on the entire Roman Empire. The final evolution of evil from the imposition of Roman Catholic Church to the political power manifest by the Torahless One is explained using the same terminology and presented to Daniel between his arrival in Babylon in 605 BCE and the empire's destruction in 539 BCE. It was and as is what follows addresses the period from 2026 to 2033 CE. Now, did you want to talk about any of that before we get into further? I know we have a little bit of a time. I'm assuming we have about another 10 minutes of programming to chat, so you tell me.
Well, yeah, no, it's perfectly stated. It's the whore who goes right from that pulpit to the podium.
Yeah.
She turns her religious power into political power. She's Nakash, a changeling, just a switch of a red dress into purple, and all of a sudden we're a different girl.
Yeah.
But it's the same whore. It's the same entrapment. It's the same enslavement. It's the, you know, I was thinking about this lately. And the Ruach that was in Shaul, Paul, created major things. It expressed itself through Paul.
Mm-hmm.
It used circular reasoning. And he spoke to ignorant people who were ignorant of Torah.
Right.
It was a perverse message, immoral, filthy. It was a lie. And he basically said that government is good.
Right.
Listen,
and the Roman government in particular.
Yeah.
mean,
this is the Ruach that hangs over the Western nations of Christianity. Mm-hmm. You look at their leaders, they're immoral, they're perverse, they're sexually perverse, they're greedy. I mean, Paul was very greedy. They're killers. Paul was a killer. You know, it's the very same Ruach that expressed itself through Paul. Then you go on the flip side and you look at Muhammad and Islamic nations. The Ruach that hangs over them is exactly like it expressed itself through Muhammad and his mm-hmm. perverted religion. You know, no respect for women. Children are abused.
Right.
People are killed in the name of their deity. It's highly corrupt. They're thieving, just like Muhammad. They leave destruction in their wake. It's exactly like Muhammad.
Well, Paul didn't do any real work. I mean, he was just, he worked with his words. I mean, he got and collected tithes and offerings. I mean,
take a place like China. Mm-hmm. Okay? What is their ancestral religion was ancestor worship, really.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what are they today? They're a slave nation under an emperor.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same Ruach.
Right. And then if that doesn't work, you can go to India where they worship every god in the world, which was a lot like what Muhammad found before he narrowed it down to one, you know, in the name of Allah. But he was a multi-worshipper of multi-gods, or worshipper of multi-gods, I should say, as are many places around the world, but none quite like India. But they set up that religion, although some people think, well, gosh, they got their act together. Well, no. If you think about it, they set up the caste system, which is nothing more than slavery. You cannot move up the caste system.
No.
I mean, if you're born into this caste, you cannot move up.
India,
you'll never get out of being
a place India is a place I know well. I've sitting on a few ashram floors over there with gurus and yoga people and siddhus and whatever. I have one thing to say on sitting on the other side of this now. India is truly the whore's whorehouse. It's got everything for anyone.
Yeah.
It's definitely and you see it in their land. It's a spirit of chaos. It's oppression. It's the same thing expressed throughout, you know, their multiple gods.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something for every flavor there. And it's a lot of it is exported into Persian Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. I can find Upanishad verses in the Quran, almost word for word. So it's not surprising. That's the other side of the flood kind of stuff over there.
Mm-hmm.
And Bali, Indonesia, all those South Pacific islands, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
Africa, you have animism,
right.
And matriarchy. I don't care what they show on TV. Mm-hmm. In reality, Africa is still a very matriarchal society, and today the black woman is the queen of destruction. She sells her own children in her own tribes, in her own lands. You know, you can't play the man, but not be the man and try to be a woman. It is perverse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men and women are equal. They're just different.
Right.
And if you take on a woman's role or a man takes on a woman's role, it's perverse. It's confusing. So it's the same kind of ruach sitting over Africa.
Mm-hmm.
A very matriarchal society, and it's just not going anywhere. Really?
Yeah. No, well,
most of the men in the villages, even today, just sit around and get drunk, and the women do most of everything.
That happens a lot of places.
Oh, yes, it does happen on occasion, but it's particularly very, very prominent
I know. I'm just teasing.
In Africa. And even pre-Islamic Arabia was very matriarchal at one time.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Queen of Sheba was,
mm-hmm.
she was the highest ruler in her land.
Yeah. And, of course, you've got, who was it? Once you start out with Astarte and you have the Queen of Heaven, I mean, it kind of lends itself to that, doesn't it?
Yes.
I mean, if that's your primary god, Astarte, and she's more powerful than the god she begat, which is
same. Well, African tribal beliefs are, I am the creator of life,
mm-hmm.
and you're
Therefore,
nobody. So I get to choose when I divorce and who I marry, who I sleep with, and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still like untouched African societies are still like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And the men just, you know, some of them will hunt, but if it's an agricultural society, it's all female. They own the land, they own the children. That's it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
yeah,
the
women
have
what would you like to do?
Dresses that are all red.
Mm-hmm.
Only the names have been changed or perverted.
Now we got to the point now, once again, we got to the point now where we'd covered the up until 26, 23. But before we left there, I was just going to say that you've got the Ruach, this spirit, this evil spirit that was in all of them. When it says about it, it's a little peculiarly written where it says, and the beast that was and is not himself is also an eighth, unless you think in terms of the other one. Now, I knew there's a little gap between where that, even before I started my study about 8 years ago, I knew there was a big gap there between the same spirit. When you'd read something like that, to the eighth one, where's the eighth one? It wasn't something that followed immediately, because there's a lot of Caesars, a lot of different people came along after that and so forth, but that are pretty evil. I mean, you could say Hitler, or, you know, if you wanted to stretch it like some of these prophecy preachers do. But the eighth one has to be the Torahless one, the one that's most prominent, that actually can destroy something in a big way. All these other guys were certainly horrible, but not to the degree that we think of in Muhammad, and the way that we think of Christianity, the Roman Catholic Church.
The eighth one is definitely the Torahless one.
It has to be a powerful, powerful being.
Side,
you're not going
to
just jump in anybody. Yeah.
Yeah, and he gets thrown into the pit. So it's him.
This is a big event.
And any other dates would really throw off the 2026 and the 2033 dates.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the work on that is irrefutable.
Yeah.
If you question it, if you logically research it, if you go into the study and really care what's there, what is he talking about? Because allegory and all throughout Yao Kanan's vision is very heavy, but it can all be found in the Torah. It's all explained in the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
Every allegory has already been explained. So this is simply Yahweh speaking through Yao Kanan. Who's coming? Yeah, the eighth one is the Torahless one, for absolute certain.
Yeah. So no debate.
No debate. Not here. No. He's going into the pit, and he's going to play with his little friends that are there. And can you imagine what that's going to be like for eternity?
No, I don't even want to think about it. I mean, I'm glad he's there, and I'm delighted that they get to join one another, that they loved each other so much. Go ahead. But it's just, I can't imagine anything as horrible. So it's
yeah,
just quite,
people, choose
quite
life.
Just.
Yeah. Choose Torah. Choose his name. It's a wonderful name.
Learn how to write it in Paleo Hebrew.
It's our shield.
It's just
our
fun
protection.
To look at. I mean, it's just, if you understand the symbols, it's just, wow. Who thinks like that? What a great name.
Yes. And And Yahweh is a shield to his people, and that's a promise. It's there for us, you know, grasp hold of it.
10 seconds.
And with that, I'll bid you adieu. Good.
And it was Shabbat Shalom. It was a wonderful talking to you. I appreciate it. I was a little spur of the moment, but geez, I learned a lot. I'm glad you did this. Thank you.
Oh, me too as well. Always in Torah is my favorite place to be. And with that, good night, people. Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Thank you, Lisa.
Ciao.